Hi, I'm Samara Weaving Snort when she laughs, Taylor.
And boy am I glad that rich people aren't real and can't actually hurt me, Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files. Listeners, as of right now, as we're recording, it is the day before Valentine's Day.
Sure is.
Love is in the air.
Yeah.
So naturally, we watched 2019's Ready or Not, directed by Matt Bennett Bettinelli Olpin. Fuck, I made myself remember how to pronounce this man's last name, and now I just didn't. Sorry, Matt. You make great movies, though. And Tyler Gillett. Starring Samara Weaving, Adam Brody, Mark O'Brien, Henry Zierney, Andy McDowell, and Elise LeVake.
This is the greatest movie ever made.
We start every single episode like, this is the greatest movie ever made.
It is!
It's the movie ever. Like most things that we watch.
I fucking love this movie. I forgot how much I loved this movie, and then I watched it again, and I was like, oh my god, this is the best.
Literally, yeah. What are your significant memories with this movie, Taylor? What was the first time you saw Ready or Not?
I saw this movie in theaters when it first came out, and I think you saw it before me?
I probably did.
Because it took a while for me to see it, and then I finally, because it was such an ordeal to see movies when I was in college, because like I didn't have a car at my school, so I had to like take the bus into town, and like it was like the bus didn't drop you off at the movie theater, so I had to like get dropped off by the bus at the Burger King and then walk like however long, like 5 minutes over to the movie theater. It was just such a hassle. So like I never saw movies. You kept saying, like, oh, this movie was so good, this movie was great. So I was like, you know what? Fucking fine. I'll go see it. I will walk from the Burger King to the movie theater, and I will see this darn movie. And you were correct. It was worth the walk. It was extremely good.
I actually have a funny story about seeing this movie for the first time.
Which please tell.
I don't know why I have so many weird stories about seeing certain movies for the first time, but anyway.
It's because your life is cursed.
It's true. God. So, in 2019, I had a job that wasn't paying me shit, so I had to sort of strategically figure out what movies I wanted to see when, unfortunately. And I can't remember what movie it was, but there was another horror movie in 2019 that came out that I wanted to see, that came out around the same time that this one did. So I had to, and I can't remember what movie it was, like, for the life of me. There was so much, like, good horror in 2019 that even as I was, like, looking at a list of, like, summer releases or horror releases in 2019, I'm like, these are all really good, and I don't know which one I had to choose between it and Ready or Not. It was not It, by the way. It was not It Chapter 2. That came out, like, I think a few months after this movie.
Yeah, it definitely was not, because I saw that, too.
Yes, I also saw that, too. We will get there one day, ladies and gentlemen, I promise. So I had to choose between some other movie and this, and I ended up choosing the other movie, which is really funny that I can't remember it now. But at the time, my parents had their friends from England visiting, and they brought their granddaughter with them, who is like kind of around, not my age, but like Jace's age. She's like, you know, maybe a few years younger than me, but we got to talking about horror movies, and I was like, well, hey, maybe we should like go see a movie together. And this was sort of a Joker's trick kind of move for me, trying to trick my parents into paying for me to see Ready or Not, because I would also be entertaining a guest. And it worked! It worked! We went to go see Ready or Not. It was me, the granddaughter. Her name is Alice. She's great. I don't think she listens to this, but shout out to Alice for helping me go see Ready or Not.
On your parents' dime.
For being an unwilling pawn in my master plan. It was me,
tricks.
Her, and Jace, and we saw it, and we all enjoyed it, and it was great.
What's there not to love?
What is there not to love about this movie, quite frankly? So, I think we should probably get back in the...
Must a movie be... I mean, that's not even a joke I can make, because this movie is really good, but like... Is it not enough to see Samara Weaving in a bloodstained wedding dress screaming? You know?
Unhinged?
Yeah.
So we should probably get back in the practice. I'm pretty sure we fell out of it because, like, House of a Thousand Corpses and Texas Chainsaw Massacre don't really have plots in the conventional sense. It's just vibes-only cinema. This movie does have a plot, so we should probably detail that for our listeners who have tragically not seen Ready or Not. Which, like, if you haven't, like, pause this podcast right now and go watch it.
This will have spoilers.
Yes, this will have spoilers.
And so, this movie does have things that if you spoil them, it might make the movie a little less fun. So if you haven't seen it, we both recommend it. And I would definitely recommend watching it because
I think it's a good time.
Part of the fun of this movie for me was the reveal that happens at the end.
Yes.
You won't get as much out of it if you're spoiled on everything beforehand.
Yes. So, like I said, turn this podcast off. Go watch it. We will be right here waiting for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Assuming you're back and you have seen Ready or Not now, wasn't it fucking great? So, Ready or Not is the story of Grace, who is an orphan, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Currently marrying into like this really rich old money family via an estranged son of theirs. And, you know, at first it's very sort of like rich people, you know, weird rich people, them being kind of snotty. And on her wedding night, because this family made its money in games, like, I think they started out with card games, board games, and then they went on to do like more modern things like getting some sports teams, whatever. Part of the ritual, I suppose you could say, or the tradition in this family is that everyone who marries into the family has to play a game on their wedding night. And most of the time, this is a normal game. However,
of course, if it was a normal game, we wouldn't have a movie. So
yes, exactly. We wouldn't be here if she just pulled checkers or whatever. Through a random sort of system, they pick a game, and the game that is chosen for Grace to play is hide and seek. And like, here's the moral of this movie: if rich people ask you to play a game, there's like an 80% chance you're about to get hunted for sport. So say no.
Yep.
There is some most dangerous game shit about to go down. Just say no and leave. And that's precisely what happens. The family, after Grace goes to hide, still assuming that this is going to be a normal game of hide and seek, the family arm themselves and begin to hunt her for sport.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just keep saying it, but like, this movie is so fucking good. It's like, the thing I love about this movie is how well it balances the genuine horror and being a comedy.
Yes.
I don't know if I would say that this movie is a comedy, but it has funny stuff in it.
There's a lot. Okay, I said this because when I watched this for the podcast, I watched it with my brother Jace. You all know Jace.
We know Jace. We love Jace.
Yes. And I said to him that I was comparing it to Halloween 2018 because in Halloween 2018, the comedy sometimes comes off as like kind of jarring and weird in between the sort of more intense moments. This movie achieves that balance a lot better in like keeping the tone consistent, but also managing to incorporate both of those elements, the comedy and the more intense shit. This is no small part, I think, due to the cast. The entire cast of this movie is having the time of their lives.
Oh, they're wonderful.
Everyone is like on point. It's such a good like ensemble cast of like fucking rich freakazoids.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like rich weirdos.
Just rich weirdos, yeah.
A particular shout out goes to the sister, Emily.
Yes.
Who is like spending the entire movie like
coked out of her mind.
Yeah, she's on so much cocaine. And she just keeps accidentally killing people.
And every time it's like, oh my god, I can't do anything right.
She's just whining to her dad. It's amazing. And the parents are like reassuring her.
Second shout out goes to Aunt Helene, who is
she's awesome.
I love her. She's insane. And she's so funny. Like,
she delivers some of the best lines in this movie.
This woman is, like, the most intense about this ritual that they have to conduct, because it is a ritual. It is, like, ritualistic. The family believes...
straight up, like, strapping Grace down to a pentagram and chanting Latin at the end. Like, it's a ritual.
Yeah, because the whole thing is that the family got their money because, like, their ancestors struck a deal with a figure called Mr. LaBelle, who is basically, like, the devil. And, yeah. they're basically, in essence, sacrificing this woman to Satan.
It's amazing. I also love the detail that it's not just the wedding sacrifices that they have to do. Like,
yep.
there is a pit full of dead goats, and Alex, the brother that Grace is marrying, says like something about how like he grew up sacrificing animals. Like, so this family like just is always doing weird shit.
That's just what rich people are like.
Mm-hmm. Andy McDowell is here. She's great.
Yes, she's fantastic. She's the mother, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I saw a review on Letterboxd that said like, and I didn't choose it for the Letterboxd section, but I thought it was kind of funny that like someone, because it was part of a longer review, but someone was saying like, Andy McDowell in real life is like a really like hardcore Christian. So like she probably thought that she was like doing like, she was like, I'm bringing to light the truth.
Oh my God.
Like I'm playing the secret Satanists that live in our society.
Oh my God. I hate that that's probably true, actually.
She was like, I'm doing what needs to be done. But she's great in this. I love the pivot that she, because she starts off, I mean, the whole family really starts off, except for a few of them, pretty sympathetic towards Grace, and they like her at the beginning, which I think makes the whole ritual even more upsetting, but also like it makes the whole thing, like their character motivations make so much more sense, because like even though they like this woman, they're still like, well, we still obviously have to kill her. Like, they have no qualms about hunting her down for sport, even though they like her as a person. And it's just, oh, it's so good, because it's like, I just love that aspect of it. Like, if they all hated her from the beginning, I think it wouldn't hit as hard.
No, yeah, definitely. And it definitely makes it more tragic from Grace's perspective, too, because, you know, I think she puts some emphasis at the beginning on like, oh, I've never had a family before, and I really want your family to like me. It doesn't go so well.
Yeah, and it's like, she actually has some like really good conversations with the family. Like, she has a fun little conversation with the mother at the beginning, and she has some fun back and forth with Daniel, Alex's brother. And when when Emily comes in with her husband, she arrives sort of late with her husband and her kids. And she bounces in the room, and she's sort of gleefully grabbing Grace's hands and being like, we're going to be besties. Like, like, the family likes her.
Yes.
They just also are like, well, you drew the hide and seek card, so now we're hunting you for sport, and they feel no remorse about it. And it's such a good switch.
Yes. While we're talking about the family members, I also want to talk about Daniel's wife, Chastity.
I love her.
I love her too. I love that, like, okay, I feel like it would have been an easy pitfall to fall into to give her like to go more into her backstory than the movie itself does, but I think it's so effective. There's one line. Chastity gives one line. She's like, you know where I was before I married you. I would rather die than go back to that. Nothing else. And that's all you need. It paints a perfect picture of like her motivations, the way it's delivered by this actress. Like, it's just so good.
I think one thing that I wanted to talk about with regards to this movie is that, like, a lot of people kind of harp on the idea of, like, oh, this movie is not very subtle, which, like, it doesn't need to be, but, like, okay.
I also want to talk about subtlety in this movie, but
I feel like if you watch this movie and your takeaway is, like, oh, this movie just says fuck rich people, you, like, didn't watch the movie. And I feel like one thing that this movie has to say beyond just fuck rich people, which it does say that, but the other thing that this movie has to say is that, like, there are so many people in this world who, I mean, this movie is very, it harps on the idea of class traitors.
Mm-hmm.
In that you have the family butler, Stevens, who, despite not being a part of this family, not being rich, not, you know, being anything, is fully willing to sell out Grace, to knock her unconscious and drive her back to the house and just do whatever it takes to get her back to this family so that they can kill her and conduct the ritual, because the family makes it profitable for him. He is kept in relative comfort by this family. And with Charity and Fitch, the people who married.
Was it Charity? I thought it, have I been saying Chastity? Fuck.
Is it? I forget if it's Charity or Chastity.
I think it is Charity, actually. Let me check. Go on. I'll check while you go on.
Okay. But like, like the idea that like almost more dangerous than the rich people are the not rich people who
are. What is Charity?
Okay.
Great. Sorry.
Sorry to this man.
Sorry to this woman.
Almost more dangerous than the rich people are the not rich people who are willing to throw other people of their class under the bus just for like a pat on the head by the rich people. And I think that that's something that kind of gets overlooked when talking about this movie is like, you know, it's always like the people who are like, you know, if you've ever gotten into a debate with somebody about like, you know, you're saying something like, oh, billionaires shouldn't have that much money. Like no one needs that much money. And like these people who are not billionaires and who are never going to be billionaires, who are just fully willing to rhetorically go to bat for the obscenely rich. Like that's what Stevens is in the movie. Like, you realize, like, it's the wealth equivalent of, like, he's not gonna fuck you, bro. Like dudes who are so obsessed with, like, defending Elon Musk, like, and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of rambling now. But, like, I think it is really interesting how this movie places culpability on people who might be lower class but who are willing to stick their necks out for the obscenely wealthy. It's just very interesting to me.
Right, and you get it in smaller ways, too, even beyond Stevens. There's that scene where Grace is trying to escape in the car, and she calls up... She calls up
she does.
What is it?
Let's be honest here. It's AAA.
Yeah, she basically calls up AAA and is talking to the guy, like...
called that in the movie, obviously, but, like, she calls up AAA.
Yeah, like, the car service hotline or whatever the fuck, and she's talking to the guy on the other end. It's like, hey, call the fucking police, these people are trying to kill me. And his response is to be like, well, ma'am, you're in a stolen car actually, so I need to remotely shut this car down and basically fuck you over.
Yeah, like this dude on the this dude who she gets a hold of at this call center for like triple, like whatever the equivalent of AAA is, like, is basically more willing to, like, follow work protocol, presumably so that he doesn't get fired or reprimanded, rather than go outside of his purview and call the cops on his own phone for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, I don't know, just, like, the small ways in which people are just willing to, like, class solidarity is not a thing in this movie, and it never is.
Even just, like, that guy who, you know, she manages to escape the grounds of the house and, like, flags down a car, and the car just, like, get the fuck out of the road and keeps driving. And obviously that could just be, like, another rich person, because I imagine this house is in an affluent area. But still, it's, like, no one is willing to help this woman. And I think it just sort of builds upon the idea that you've been the ideas that you've kind of been positing about the themes of this movie. Also, I just want to say,
like, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but like, so many of the problems would have been solved in an instant if anybody in this movie gave a shit about Grace.
Exactly.
That's all I have to say. Like, Grace is fucked over at every turn by people who are more concerned about themselves than about her. And it's like, if we just stuck together and helped each other out, this wouldn't have happened the way that it happened. She wouldn't have gotten to the point where she did. Like, if Stevens had been a normal fucking person and just been like, helped her out a little bit, it would have been over in 5 seconds.
Yep, and even the maids that work in the Ladomas house, we don't get to see much of two of them because they die off pretty quick.
Yep.
But even the one that Grace is like, hey, you know, I'm going to try and, like, help you out if you help me out. She responds by basically calling the family over, like, hey, she's over here. Come fucking kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah. I just want to say, in reference to the subtlety of this movie, Fuck you if you think movies need to be subtle, first off. Okay,
for fucking real. Anybody who's genuinely being like, this movie was not subtle in its intentions. Fuck you.
It wasn't trying to be. You know what this movie is like? And I said this to Jace while we were watching. This movie is like the Purge movies, which will, like, beat you over the head with their symbolism and what they mean. And they're right to do it, because that's the only fucking way that these messages are going to get across in this day and age, is if, like, the movie just...
Not even just that. It's just, like, why does it even have to be?
Exactly.
Who cares?
Exactly. This movie isn't trying to be subtle, is the thing. And sometimes movies just don't try to be subtle. Have you seen fucking Get Out? Get Out is not subtle.
Also, it's like every single time that people are like, like, this movie was not subtle with its messaging in the slightest. Okay, I would like you to give me an example of a movie that is like the level of subtlety with its social messaging that you would prefer. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
These people can never give an example of that, because those movies don't exist. Any movie with any kind of social messaging is going to be shut down by reactionary critics as being too obvious, or like, yo, they're hitting me over the head with their moral about how rich people suck. Well, if a movie had any subtext about anything, you would think it was too much, because what you want is for movies to not have any subtext in the first place. So fuck you.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the same people who are like, oh man, media is so political these days, as if it hasn't always been.
It's like people who say that, it's like, oh, so what you actually meant was that the main character was black. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, cool. Exactly. Exactly.
Really cool. Love that. Like, any amount of subtlety is not going to be enough for these people. So why not just go balls to the wall the way that this movie does and just fully have the character say, fuck rich people, in the middle of the movie?
Exactly.
Why not? Just fucking go for it. Who cares?
At this point, like, it's what we fucking need.
This movie is what we fucking need. A lot of people... In their reactions to this movie, and like retroactively looking back on it, have been talking about the like pairing up this movie with Parasite and Knives Out as like the Fuck Rich People 2019 trilogy.
The Fuck Rich People cinematic universe.
And I find it so interesting, like, that in 2019, like, all these movies kept coming out where the moral was just like, God, rich people suck.
Oh my God, considering the climate, like, whew.
We need more.
We do need more. We need more Fuck Rich People movies. We need more. More in the Fuck Rich People cinematic universe, please.
Give us more, please. Thank you.
Do you want a fun, unrelated fact about this movie?
I would love one.
So, this movie has a tie to a movie that we have previously reviewed on this podcast. Mm-hmm. The filming location for some of the interiors of the Laodamas mansion is Casa Loma, which is, I believe, let me just look here.
It's in Canada, right?
It is in Canada. It is in Toronto. And this movie, there is a few shots in this movie that show the interior of a library with, like, books behind glass cases. And when I was watching this movie for the first time, I was like, oh, that room looks really familiar. Where have I seen that room before? Turns out, it is the same room that they filmed the McMichael ballroom scene in Crimson Peak.
I knew that, but, like, that's such a fun little fact.
It's very fun. There's, like, a bunch of movies that have been filmed, because I'm looking at the Wikipedia article right now. They filmed X-Men, Chicago, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Descendants, both of the Twitches movies.
Oh,
and a few more.
Cinematic masterpieces, the Twitches movies.
Truly.
That wasn't like an ironic thing, by the way. I fucking love Twitches and Twitches too. They're great.
I haven't seen them in forever.
They're so good.
Yeah, it was also the filming of the live Rocky Horror that they did a few years ago.
That's so funny. This, whoever owns this castle is getting, like, Hollywood bank all the time. Like,
truly,
I love that for them.
Truly. Kind of want to visit it one day now.
I also really want to visit it now. I didn't know all those movies were filmed there. I knew the Crimson Peak scene was filmed there, but I had
I knew Crimson Peak. I also knew X-Men because I actually found this fact out from the kill count of Ready or Not on the Dead Meat channel. And again, if you're not following Dead Meat on YouTube and you want listen to this podcast, what the fuck are you doing? Go follow Dead Meat and watch all the kill counts because they're great.
I could watch Samara Weaving do anything.
Oh my god. Frankly. I am so glad.
I would watch Samara Weaving, like, just hanging out. Like, doesn't even need to have a plot, just Samara Weaving going about her day. She's so fucking funny, and, like, she's just, I love the way she plays Grace.
Oh, she's so good.
Her performance is phenomenal.
She's so good. I'm so glad that Samara Weaving just decided, I'm gonna do horror.
It's what she fucking deserves, and she's great in every single movie I've ever seen her in.
It's true.
I still need to see the miniseries remake of Picnic at Hanging Rock because I heard she's
I do too. I do too. I forgot she was in that.
I watched the original in high school and it was pretty good. And it had a lot of like weird lesbian subtext, but I've heard that the remake goes like pretty explicit with it, so that's exciting.
Oh, love to hear it.
Yeah.
Love to hear it.
Yeah. Love gay people. I would also like to give a shout out to Christine Brunn, who plays Fitch, who many people would know from Orphan Black, which is a show I was fucking obsessed with in high school. And so it was very bizarre to see him showing up here.
Orphan Black was like the one property, like the one like 2012, 2013 property that somehow managed to like not sink its claws into me.
I was deep in it. I was deep in the Orphan Black world. And he was great on Orphan Black, so I'm happy that he's in this movie because he's fucking hilarious.
Oh, he's hysterical in this movie. He's like easily probably like him and Aunt Helene are like the best the funniest performances.
One of the funniest scenes in the world is like when he is like crouched in the bathroom watching a video about how to use a crossbow.
Fun fact, the two writers of the movie are playing the guys in the YouTube crossbow tutorial.
What? I didn't know that.
Yep. And one of them, okay, so again, I got this from the Kill Count video, and one of them is named Ryan Murphy. And I was like, there's no fucking way. And there was no fucking way. It was not American Horror Story Ryan Murphy, my enemy in all things.
Can you imagine if it was, though? Can you imagine?
I don't want to think about what this movie would
be. That would be so dark-sided.
Like. I don't.
Ryan Murphy did make a show called Hollywood that I haven't watched, which has Samara Weaving in it. So, like,
you know how we have like the Beastly Universe, the Beastly Kingdom universe, where everything is great.
It's true.
Whatever the polar opposite of the Beastly Kingdom universe is, has Ready or Not written by Ryan Murphy.
would it be the Superstar Limo universe?
Yes. Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
Sorry, we're just dropping theme park esoterica on all of you in the middle of our horror podcast, but like...
Oh, just wait till we get to Escape from Tomorrow.
I forgot we were planning on doing that at some point in the future. Oh, you guys are gonna get fucking...
You guys are gonna hate us.
You guys are gonna hate us even more than you hated us in the Haunted Mansion episode, because it's gonna be a bloodbath.
Anyway,
yeah, in the Superstar Limo universe, Ryan Murphy wrote Ready or Not.
Can I just turn back to Grace for a minute?
Please.
I mean, of course. I'm not expecting you to say no. I think everyone should always want to talk about Grace.
Exactly. Can you talk about Grace forever? For the rest of the podcast and for all time?
Absolutely. I think in terms of Final Girls, because we've talked about this for the past couple of movies in this block, wherein, like, Sally Hardesty was kind of the blueprint that gave birth to, like, you know, Laurie Strode, Nancy Thompson.
Yeah, Thompson.
On and on and on. I think in terms of Final Girls from this block, Grace is the one who strikes a really good balance between sort of the Laurie Strode survivor type and the Sally Hardesty desperate to survive, get me the fuck out of here type. I think it's really, really interesting and really good that she doesn't, like, immediately snap into, like, action hero mode, and she never really is like action hero. It's just this woman trying everything she possibly can to survive and to get out of her situation, and it never gets to a point where it doesn't feel real. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just think she's wonderful. I just think she's so good. She's such a good protagonist for this movie.
I love when she tries to do things and fails.
Yeah, because it's realistic. It's relatable. It's, you know, it racks up the tension in this movie because...
I'm thinking, in particular, I'm thinking of this scene where she has stolen the gun from off of the wall and she's like, you see, I mean, she's holding the gun on the poster, like...
Yep.
It's set up in this very action girl kind of way. And then when she spends a whole scene hiding, trying to get the bullet into the gun in order to use it on Stevens, the butler, when he hears her. And then when she finally gets the chance to use this gun that we've been building up the whole movie, it's fucking display only and the bullets don't work.
Yep.
I just want it. It's such a good... bait and switch. I'm obsessed with it. And I think that the marketing also does like a really good job of like setting you up again. Like she's holding the gun on the poster. Like you think that she's going to be this like badass holding like this big gun. And it just completely fucking does not work out for her.
Mm-hmm. By the way, just while we're talking about the poster, I want to call out whoever the fuck designed the DVD case for this movie, because you had that gorgeous poster. And you didn't fucking use it. You used some, like, ugly-ass, photoshopped in 5 minutes piece of shit. Fuck you.
Graphic.
Whoever you are, fuck you. I'm coming for your kneecaps. How dare you? How dare you?
You sound like that one person from that TikTok video. I'm coming for your left shoes, and I'm shitting in them, buddy. That's
fuck,
like,
I had water
graphic
in my
designer
mouth.
Of the Ready or Not poster.
I had water in my mouth. I just almost choked to death on mic. Anyway. Yeah, fuck you. I'm coming for your left shoes. I'm shitting in them. Like,
why would you do that?
How could you?
And if you're listening to this thinking to yourself, how bad could the DVD poster be? Google it. Google it. And then you'll understand.
Google it. You'll see both versions and you'll understand what a fucking crime this is.
So beautiful. How could you fuck that up? So evil.
Actually, can we talk about the production design in this movie?
Because really it's quick. Amazing.
I know we talked about Casa Loma being used as a filming location, but like even just like the opening of this movie shows, because as I mentioned, the Lidomas family got their money from selling like board games and stuff. Even just like the design of these fake games is so realistic. Like they look like games that could have been like on the shelves in different eras of American history. Also, I love the little nod that one of them is named Family Ritual.
I love that all of the games are so thinly veiled. Like, they're so fucking funny. The titles of the games are great.
There's, like, Family Ritual, Mr. LaBelle's Gambit. There's a few more. Did I write any of them down?
I just love them. They're great.
They're so good. Taylor, how have we made it a half hour into this fucking podcast without talking about the Hide and Seek song?
I was waiting for the opportune moment.
How?
I was going to bring it up after we talked about the games because it's the best.
Oh my god. This is the biggest banger that has ever come out of a horror movie.
Listeners, I listen to this song like unironically, like all the time. It's a banger.
Oh my god. It is the perfect balance of like, you know, kind of bouncy vintage nursery rhyme-esque song and just the creepiest thing you've ever heard in your fucking life.
Yeah, but it like the thing about it is that it never quite tips the scale into like this would never like it never has like the Annabelle problem where you know what I mean, where like if you look at the Annabelle doll, you're like, no one would ever use that as like an actual doll for a child. But like and, like, I feel like this very easily could have been that, where you're, like, listening to this song and you're like, why would anyone buy this record for their child? But, like, the way that the song is composed, it's just creepy enough where it could be unintentional.
Right. I feel like if you heard this...
this could very much be an unintentionally creepy old record that someone, like, dug out and was like, haha, isn't this kind of weird in hindsight? Like... But, like, you could picture somebody buying this for a child.
Right.
Like, I just think it's great. I think it balances those two. Like, it's such a... Sorry. I'm, like, tripping over my words because I just love this song so much.
It's so good. Yeah, I feel like if you heard this song out of context, you could be like, huh, that does sound like a little creepy, I guess. But in the movie, like, the visuals that it is playing behind, fully, that's what tips the scales into mm-hmm. creepy. And it's so effective. It's so good. I love it. This song is on my Halloween playlist, and I listen to it in October all the time, and outside of October, but, you know.
So incredibly good.
So good. So good. I found a version on YouTube, and I'll see if I can, like, maybe link it on the podcast Twitter or something that is, like, sound designed to sound like it's being played off an old record. It's so good.
I know the video that you're talking about. It's great.
It's so good. I'll try to post it on the podcast Twitter later.
I would like this, it just seems like a real old record. And like, as someone who collects like old records, and like, I'm like always really interested in like children's records too. Like, I don't know, something about them has always been really interesting to me. Like, I have this like really old like Disney record that I love. This like Silly Symphonies record. It's great.
I was gonna ask if it was Song and Story of the Haunted Mansion.
No, it's not. I haven't actually managed to get a hold of that one yet, but I want it. But it's like a Silly Symphonies record from like the 60s, and like, I'm not gonna go off on it, but like, it's one mm-hmm. of my prized possessions. And I've always loved like old children's records, because they're always so creepy in hindsight. But they were never supposed to be.
And that's the exact vibe that this movie has captured. It's great. It's
amazing. I also love at the end when, like, the distorted version of it is playing as Mr. LaBelle is giving the family their comeuppance. It's great. Yes.
Can we talk about that scene?
Ironic little echo. And, like, there's no reason why it should be distorted other than Mr. LaBelle likes drama.
No, actually, there is. Because, remember, this is when, like, the house is on fire. And it shows the record player is on fire.
Fuck, so it's warping, yeah. They thought of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. LaBelle does like drama, though.
I mean, he's the devil. Of course he does. I did notice, and I didn't notice this until I wrote down the name Mr. LaBelle in my notes. Belial.
Oh, fuck me.
It's an anagram with Belial. So, yeah, there you go.
You know, anytime that anyone brings up Belial as, like, a demon or, like, a mythological figure, I just think of Basket Case.
Can we talk about the ending?
I would love to talk about the ending, because it's so good. And no one ever sees it coming. I watched this movie. The second time that I ever watched this movie was with my dad and my sister. And I convinced them to watch it, and neither of them are like, you know, they were both kind of like skeptical about it. But like, mm-hmm. I was like, no, I promise you it's really good. And they both loved it. So like, suck it. But they were not, like, the ending they did not see coming at all.
Oh, God. That scene was done somewhat practically with, really? Like, yes. I don't remember exactly, and it sucks that I don't remember, because I've literally just watched this fucking video, like, maybe an hour ago. But I do know that they, like, were throwing, no, they were shooting the cast with, like, meat guns. To simulate, like, getting spattered by the... Because, like, just for the listeners, and you guys have already seen the movie, I assume, if you've made it this far into the podcast, but everyone goes boom. Everyone explodes in, like, a gory mess. They do be going boom. They just explode in a gory mess, and it is disgusting and wonderful. And the entire, like... I think they're in, like, a dining room or a living room or whatever, like, completely covered in blood. The sister Emily has to, like, usher her kids into, like, another room so they can explode off screen, because no one wants to see kids die on screen.
Although those kids did deserve it. Fuck them kids.
Fuck them kids. Fuck Georgie, the little shit. They got to use a meat cannon for that one. Because it's in another room. It's, you see them go behind a doorway, and then just big explosion of blood and guts from the doorway.
That's fucking amazing.
It was apparently Samara Weaving's idea that Grace would start laughing as this was happening.
It's so good when she starts laughing. Like, it's like the entire, like, the absurdity of everything that's happened has just hit her for the first time.
Yep, and she's just losing it.
And
I love it.
She's just reached the point where it's like, it doesn't even feel real anymore.
Right.
It's so also, good. It was such a good character choice.
It was. Also,
and also, love- like, having established that she has a very distinctive laugh at the beginning of the movie, again, like I said in my intro, like, her little snort when she laughs, which is adorable. And then as she's laughing at the end, when she's, like, snorting as she laughs, it's just, she's very cute. I just love Samara Weaving.
She deserves everything.
She does.
She definitely deserves the, like, nod of respect that Mr. LaBelle gives her. I love that little touch so much. And I don't, like, I know there's some people who interpret it as, like, not that, but I genuinely do think it's just Mr. LaBelle being like, you know what? Well played.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like, I've seen people who are kind of like, well, I hope they make a sequel to this movie where Grace finds out that she is now indentured to Mr. LaBelle. And I'm like, I don't, like, no one wants it. I don't want it.
No one does.
That's not what Mr. LaBelle was saying at the end of the movie. I feel like you said, Jemmy, it was very much just like a, you know what, touche. Like, you fucking did it. Like, fine.
Good for you. Well played. I, the devil, give you my respect. Which she fully deserves. Her.
And you know what? Since she technically married Alex, she's got all that money now, so.
Yep. She's got the money. She's got the house. Good for her. She's
like the sole heir of, like, the what is it? The Dominion? The Ladomas, the Gaming Dominion?
Yeah, the Gaming Dynasty.
No, that's like a whole thing where he says, like, no, like, oh, we prefer Dominion. That was like,
oh, okay, I wasn't
that was,
sure.
That was like a trailer line.
Oh, huh. Well, that's, I guess
that
just...
I think is also a cute exchange because it that sort of teeters on the border of being a little too ridiculous, but it works in context.
Listen, I was too distracted by Samara Weaving covered in blood.
Period and true and real.
I want to talk about, just really quick, I meant to mention this earlier, I want to talk about the goat pit real quick.
I would love to talk about the goat pit. Why is no one talking about the goat pit?
I'm dying to talk about the goat pit.
I'm dying to talk about the goat pit.
First off, fantastic little bit of symbolism where, you know, people, both human bodies and goat bodies are down there. All sacrifices are equal in the eyes of the Ladomas family. You know, the human sacrifices don't get any special treatment. They literally see these people as livestock to slaughter as soon as they choose that hide-and-seek card.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that goat pit gives us the nastiest scene in this movie.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I know, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
And if you've seen this movie, you know exactly what we're talking about.
I feel like everyone who's seen this movie is, like, cringing right now because they know. Context for those, and I'm sure there's no one listening at this point who hasn't seen it, but just in case.
I'm, like, looking at my hand right now.
Yeah, I am too. I just lifted my hand up to, like...
Oh, God.
Grace is found in the goat stables, which is a thing that this family has. They just keep the goats that they sacrifice in stables.
Sacrifice. I love it.
Yep. By Georgie, one of the kids, and she tries to kind of appeal to him and he just shoots her in the hand, and because of that she falls back into the goat pit where all of the rotting bodies of the goats the family has sacrificed are, along with the body of the movie. So the movie opens, we see another sacrifice, human sacrifice. It is Helene's husband. And we see his body down. Yes, Charles. We see his body down there. So we, you know, she's down there. She has to, like, climb her way out on a broken ass ladder. And oh boy, there is a nail.
When the camera pans up to the nail at the top, and you, like, everyone in the audience suddenly remembers that she got a hole shot through her hand.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck. They're not like, gonna. They wouldn't.
And they do. And they do. She has to stick her hand right through that nail and pull herself up like that. And it is the nastiest shit in this movie.
With her hand whole.
Oh, it's so gross. It's so bad. And you feel like how painful that would be. Like you. Ugh. I hate it. I love it, but though. I hate it. It's great, but I hate it.
What is it with, like, horror movies and nails? Like, I am now thinking about A Quiet Place.
I literally said to Jace as we were watching this, I'm like, this makes me think of that scene in A Quiet Place. And I don't know if, I think he hasn't seen A Quiet Place. But, like, ugh, when she steps on that nail, it's the same thing. Like, visceral. I think it's because it's, like, the kind of wound where it doesn't, like, it won't kill you. It won't even, like, really badly hurt you, but you know what it feels like to step on a nail. And
something
you...
like, so I don't know, to me, I always think of it like, in my head, I always call it small pain.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, it's not, like, in terms of intensity. Like, obviously, it hurts a lot. It's a fucking nail in your foot or in your hand. But, like, for me... The on film at least, small pain is always worse than intense, like, big pain. Like, seeing somebody, like, ripped open, like, seeing someone's stomach be ripped open on screen is not gonna, like, really fuck me up. But someone stepping on a nail is, like, I'm gonna be thinking about that for the rest of my life.
Exactly, because it's a pain that you probably know, right? Like, you don't, obviously you don't know what it's like to get your stomach ripped open because you're alive.
Yeah.
But you know what it feels like to step on a nail, probably.
Or like when a character is brought into a hospital in a movie and you get that, like, a close-up of a needle going into their arm.
Oh, no, no, no.
It's always so bad.
I hate that. I hate it so much. Even in situations where it's not supposed to be, like, scary or even painful, like, I can't do needles going into people's arms. I can't.
Yeah, and, it, like, that kind of thing, it always, like, you just end up thinking about it way more than, like, someone's head getting chopped off or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that horror directors who are able to effectively use these, like, small pain moments...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, they're on my shit list because why did you do that to me? Fuck you. But second of all, very talented, but also fuck you.
Exactly.
I respect you, but I hate you.
We haven't brought up the fact that the directors of this movie, who collectively call themselves Radio Silence, just released the new Scream movie, which is very, very good. And this movie was kind of what gave me faith in Scream.
Can we call it what it's supposed to be called? Which is Five Cream.
Five Cream, sure.
friend of the pod, L, I think, came up with that.
Yes. Yeah, she was just saying it to us a couple days ago.
But I haven't been able to stop calling it that.
I remember when I found out, like, that they were doing the next Scream movie, and I was like, oh, okay, so, like, it's in good hands. Because I've seen Ready or Not, and I fucking love it. And I think bringing those vibes to a Scream movie was perfect. And it ended up being that way. So, congrats, boys. You did it.
Still haven't seen the new Scream. I was told there was a DILF there.
There is a DILF. There is a DILF for you.
So I'm excited about that. Actually, there's several DILFs in it.
Yes.
More than one DILF. So this...
DILF-heavy film.
Was made for me. Dilf City. What was I talking about?
I think it's also very funny because, okay, love Ready or Not, love Scream. They also did another movie called Devil's Due, which is...
I've heard of this movie. I've heard it was not very good.
It's not very good. And and I'm sorry, boys. I'm sorry. You guys are great. I love you. I don't understand how you could make Devils 2.
Nobody's first movie is, like, good, though.
That's true. That's true.
You know, like, they were still getting their sea legs.
You know what? Here's the thing, too. Like, Devils Due still lives rent-free in my head. is the thing.
Okay, like, so like, yeah, so like, even if it wasn't good, was it? It does occupy rent space. So like,
it does. It does. Like, I don't know if any of you know this about me, but when I want to like be productive and like clean my room or something, I will just like throw on some like found footage movie, because I don't know what it is. Found footage horror movies make me productive. And Devil's Due is to this day in that lineup of like movies that I throw on when I need to get shit done. So there you go.
Thanks, Radio Silence. You help Jemmy keep her room clean.
Yes. And I'm so excited to see like whatever they do next, because they've been putting out bangers.
Banger after banger. I love the color grading in this movie. I know people shit on it sometimes. I love the colors in this movie. I think the greens are gorgeous. I think like maybe I'm just starved for movies that don't have that like concrete gray, blue and orange look to them.
You could just say like, Marvel movies, Taylor. You won't hurt my feelings.
Any movie that doesn't do that, I'm like, ooh, like I'm like a seal clapping.
yeah.
But like, I like when movies are green.
I mean, we're Saw bitches, so like, we just feel right at home with green lighting.
Exactly. Exactly.
I didn't notice. Like, I just noticed this viewing. I said to Chase, I'm like, why is this color graded like a fucking Saw movie?
It's so green. This movie is so green.
And we love that.
Yeah, we do love that. I think more movies should be green. Fuck blue and orange. All my homies hate blue and orange.
True. Someone fucking fire whoever color grades Marvel movies and get someone else to do it.
Guardians of the Galaxy are the only Marvel movies that are color graded in a way that doesn't make me just want to fall asleep and snore.
Oh, you want to do my wife like that?
Yeah, huh? I do. I do.
Fuck you.
Fuck you.
WandaVision is color graded well.
Okay, WandaVision is color graded well, but it's a TV show. It's a different thing.
Okay, fine.
I'm talking about the movies.
You should see Shang. Okay, no, we're gonna stop here.
I love Daniel.
Yes,
he's great. But I don't respect people who ship him with Grace.
Yeah,
that's my hot take. Sorry if I've alienated anyone listening.
I'm sorry. Why on God's green flat fucking earth would this woman want to marry another Laodamas? Like, why? She is not going to want anything to do with this fucking family. Nope. Despite being its sole heir. There's no fucking way.
I'm outing myself as the kind of person who goes on AO3 immediately after watching a new movie. It's fine. But mm-hmm. The entire AO3 tag is just Grace Daniel. And I'm like, guys, you can't though.
You
can do whatever you want. I'm not a cop, but like,
I simply think Grace should kiss a woman.
Grace X Charity?
No. Okay.
Question mark?
Wait. Shut the fuck up. What's the name of the main character in Knives Out? I haven't seen it in a hot second.
Oh, Marta.
I think Marta and Grace should kiss.
I was about to suggest Grace and Charity hate sex, but like that too.
I mean, that too. That would be good too. But like, I think Grace and Marta should kiss.
I also think Grace and Marta should kiss. I think Grace should kiss a woman in Ready or Not Too.
I think Grace should kiss a woman on the mouth.
I mean, I like, let's throw all our cards on the table here. I think Grace should kiss me.
I also think Grace should kiss me.
Think Daniel should kiss me, but like, I don't think they should kiss each other.
That's what bisexuality is.
Adam Brody is so hot.
He's a nice looking dude. He is definitely like the most attractive man in the cast, but
something about like when he's just scruffy and he's got the like,
there's just something about a scruffy man,
when his tie comes undone. Oh, okay.
I'm a lesbian, but like, there's something about a scruffy looking guy.
We're moving on. Whatever. I'm not immune to a hot man. I'm not immune to a hot, scruffy man.
Hot, scruffy, pathetic men.
Yep. He's so pathetic.
that's his best trait to you. Pathetic.
When a fictional man is like sadly drinking, oh my god.
Oh no.
Many Greens. Whatever. I'm just saying. I'm normal, I promise. See, the real reason that people shouldn't ship Grace and Daniel is because Grace should go kiss a woman, and Daniel's for me.
Exactly.
Is for me. Okay.
Is for you.
Moving on. I feel like I'm having, like cross-continental solidarity with Rhea going off about Bela Lugosi in the Dracula episode of Aether and Ichor, which you guys should listen to if you haven't.
Extremely good.
Just, like, stopping a podcast dead in its tracks to be horny is the most valid thing.
One of these days... Well, I mean, we never mind. We literally just had that episode for me, so...
This is an incredibly horny podcast just in general.
It's true.
And if you guys aren't down with that, you can leave.
Horror is for being horny, I think.
Horny. Horror needs to come back, like, in a genuine
way. Please. Anyway.
This movie is kind of horny. At least, like, in the beginning, when Grace is, like, so DTF after the wedding.
Oh my god, poor Grace. She should be getting, like, her back blown out, but instead she has to be, like, fighting for her life.
That's all she wanted out of her wedding night. It's just, she just wanted to get her back blown out. She was, like, crawling on top of her husband the second that the wedding was over, the second the ceremony was over. Like, she deserved to just fuck and go to bed.
Truly.
Instead, she had to do whatever the fuck happened the rest of the movie. I would actually like to give a shout out to, Alex, for being just such, he's so hateable.
Jace and I were talking about this because Jace likes this movie, but he doesn't like the character arc for Alex.
Oh, I'm interested. Tell me more.
That
wasn't sarcastic, by the way. I just have autism and can't emote properly when I speak. Like, actually, I'm genuinely interested. Please tell me more.
See, I just figured that. Like, automatically because I'm
because
also
you know me so well by now.
No, we were going back and forth about this because he is of the opinion that Alex should have that the setup and payoff for Alex wasn't great, and that he should have just been, like, good. And I understand where he's coming from with that, especially since I think we also were talking about how, while he likes this movie, it is a little bit too mean-spirited for his tastes, which, understandable. This is kind of a mean-spirited movie. But I can't quite put into words why I disagree with him, but I do. I think it just has a lot to do with the fact that, like, the thesis statement of this movie is fuck rich people, for the most part.
I mean, I think that the thesis statement of this movie is that at the end of the day... Well, one of many thesis statements, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, like I said, there are several. But, like, that rich people will always protect their own.
Yeah, exactly.
And at the end of the day, if it comes down to having to give up your wealth or fucking someone else over, rich people are always going to want to protect the wealth.
Right. And I think it's kind of important to hammer that message home. To be like, this guy has, like, at first will want to, like, will try to help you out, and it seems like your interests are his, but there are little hints dropped throughout the movie that this guy, like, he married Grace for very selfish reasons,
mm-hmm.
in that he was like, oh, okay, this woman will fix me, you know? Or...
It's not even an or situation. He fully just thinks that she's going to make him a better person just by virtue of her being a good person and being around him.
Exactly. And also, like, he fully could have told her what was going to fucking happen.
Okay! He fully could have fucking told her!
But he didn't want to because, obviously, if she finds out that's what's going to happen, she's going to be like, okay, cool. Bye then. Like, any... sane person would, even if she doesn't, like, believe that the curse is gonna get them or whatever, like...
Which I don't know if she does until the end.
No, she wouldn't. She wouldn't. No fucking sane person. If any person...
There's no reason for her to believe that. All she knows is that these people believe that that is the case, and that they're trying to kill her.
Exactly. And I just think as much as we see him sort of be conflicted, I think it's an important character beat that the end of that conflict is like, nope, I'm gonna protect I'm going to do what it takes for me to not die, you know? Even if it means sacrificing this woman who I married. Does that make sense? I don't think that makes
sense. Selfishness at the core of his being, which is only, like, marginally fixed by him having been removed from his family.
Exactly. And it's not even
then once he gets back around them and once, like, everything starts, once it starts to be clear that everything is at stake and that it's not just going to be, I get to live apart from my family and they give me money every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes entirely self-interested.
Right. Like cards on the table, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, men ain't shit.
Men ain't shit, baby.
I'm sorry.
Men ain't shit. This is also part of the men ain't shit cinematic universe.
Well, no, we do have Daniel who is.
We do have Daniel who is slightly better.
Yes. Daniel is like the only person in this movie who at the very end tries to help out and he dies for it.
Yeah.
Because rich people protect their own until their own decide to not act in the interest of. Correct. I don't know what I'm fucking saying.
No, you're right. You are saying something that is true. Like,
as soon as you decide to act out against their wishes, you're dead.
You're about as, yeah, you're as good as dead to them. Yep. Anyway, fuck rich people.
Anyway, fuck rich people.
Unless rich people want to give me money, in which case, I love you.
Yeah.
If you want to pay me.
I'll be a class trader.
I will. I'll be Stevens. I have no morals.
We will be Stevens for hire.
I'll be Stevens. I have no morals. It's fine.
Oh boy, what an episode this has been.
Yeah, it's always we're always having a normal one here on the Final Girl Files.
But I do understand like where Jace's opinion comes from. Like I can see where like it would be a valid criticism of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, from a certain standpoint, wrong.
Yeah, no. And, like, I do think that Alex is selfish. Except I do think wrong,
and I want to beat him up. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, fuck Jace. No.
Fuck Jace. No.
I do. I actually do think that Alex's selfishness probably could have been played up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are circumstances, like, I do understand where that twist for some people could have come out of nowhere. I feel like it probably could have been built up upon a little bit better over the course of the story, but
I think it's enough that we already know that he was selfish enough not to tell her about the whole thing.
That's true. And she does give him hell for that.
Yeah. I personally feel like that's enough of a buildup to justify what he does at the end of the movie. But maybe I'm just, I don't know. Whatever.
I can see where it wouldn't be for some people, though. Like, I can see where that criticism comes from. I like to be fair.
I also like to be fair. So I do a segment on this podcast called Live Laugh Letterboxd, where I read funny Letterboxd reviews. This one had a bunch of good ones, so I'm going to rattle them off now.
Go for it.
Aaliyah says, in the name of the Father, Parasite, the Son, Knives Out, and the Holy Spirit, Ready or Not. 5 stars.
Amen.
Amen, baby. Opie says, no cell phone in sight, literally just playing hide and seek. 4.5 stars.
Well, no, there is a cell phone in this movie.
You know what? Opie, factually incorrect.
I do love the bit where Fitch has his cell phone out and he's like Googling devils with the pacts with the devil bullshit or not.
Okay, can we also talk about the text that he gets from his friend where it's
I forgot what it is.
Where he's like, yo, dude, what's up? And he's like, nothing much, family shit.
Not wrong.
Very
not
good.
Not wrong.
Oh, very good. Fitch on his cell phone is an integral part of this film's comedy, so...
It's true. Sorry, Opie.
Sorry, Opie. Izzy says, now how do you explain that to the police?
It's a good fucking question. That's actually what Ready or Not 2 is. Just Grace is trying to, like, explain or come up with an explanation for this for the cops. Actually, you know what? I think she gives a pretty good one at the end.
Just
in-laws.
In-laws. I feel like that's enough. Another one by Aaliyah, who is just turning out banger after banger. Her icon on Letterboxd is also Natalie Portman in Black Swan, so like taste.
Love it.
Says, now why do they have to make the hide and seek song such a banger? Lord knows I would not survive this scenario. I'd be straight vibing, not even bothering to hide. 5 stars.
Truly. She gets it.
They would catch me because I'd just be dancing.
Exactly.
Jameel Bowie Bouie, sorry if I mispronounced your name, friend, says, rich incompetents who sustain their wealth with the blood of the working class. Shit could have been written by Marx and Engels themselves. It rules. 3.5 stars.
This is what Marx wanted.
This is what Marx wanted. I feel like if Marx saw Ready or Not, he'd be like, hell yeah.
He would.
By the way, this is just like a personal anecdote, but the other night me and my sister were eating dinner together and my sister had to cut me off in the middle of a rant because she goes, I love you so much, but I really just don't want to hear about the Communist Manifesto right now. Which is a real sentence that was said to me in real life. So if anyone love wants this. To know what it's like to be my friend, that's it.
I can confirm.
Robbie says, the family in this and the one in Get Out probably go golfing together. 4.5 stars.
That's correct. That is extremely correct. I would not be surprised.
I also would not be surprised. I feel like they're chums. And finally, Kyle says, me and my friends, we're looking for a movie to watch. We picked this one. Best decision ever. It's got everything you want. It reminded me of the days when I played Manhunt on the block till like 2 in the morning. Just this is more violent, obviously. Samara Weaving is mad hot, yo. Never thought you could pull off a wedding dress with a pair of Converse so flawlessly until now. The himbo energy in that Letterboxd review, off the charts.
I love it. I love this man. Thank you, sir.
Kyle is also a Letterboxd patron, so like, I want to know your story.
What is his journey? Kyle, what's your journey? How do you
exude such potent himbo energy in this reply while also being on Letterboxd enough to be a patron of Letterboxd? Incredible. What's your life like?
Tell us everything.
I want to be your best friend. Like, he gave it 4 stars. I just cannot get over Samara Weaving is mad hot, yo.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. Samara Weaving is mad hot, yo. So what would you say on a scale of 1 to 5 you would rate this movie?
I'm gonna go, okay, what did I give this on Letterboxd? Hang on.
This is a tricky one.
This is a tricky one, because the thing is, I love this movie. I gave this movie 4.5 stars on Letterboxd, and I think I'm gonna give it 4.5 stars here. I love this movie a lot. It's just not quite up there with, like, The Conjuring 2, you know what I mean? Or, like, Crimson Peak.
Yeah. I think I'm also gonna give it 4.5 stars. It's great, it's not an all-time.
Exactly. It's great. I would watch it. Like, if you were hanging out with me and were like, hey, let's watch Ready or Not, I'd be like, fuck yeah. But it's not quite an all-timer. Just, like, on personal taste.
Just a great movie.
Great movie. Watch it.
You should all definitely watch it. Yeah. That's our pod on Ready or Not. That's our show. That's our story, and we're sticking to it.
You can follow us on Twitter at FGFpod. Instagram at the same place. I believe that's still all we have.
Yes, it is.
You can also give us those 5 stars on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. Do whatever needs to be done to tell us that you enjoyed our show. Next time, we will be watching 1972's The Red Queen Kills 7 Times, a giallo movie that neither of us have seen.
I'm very excited.
I am too. I keep meaning to watch more giallo. So...
Me too. That's why I decided that we should watch this, is because, like, I've seen a few giallo movies. I've seen, obviously, Suspiria. I've seen Blood and Black Lace. But I haven't, like, delved super deep into the, like, giallo canon. Mm. So I want to kind of push myself a little bit. I almost recommended Blood and Black Lace, but I was like, no. I want to do one that I haven't
seen. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to, like, discuss a movie that we, like, neither of us have seen before, because this, I think the last time we did that was Clinical.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that one.
The last time we did that was Clinical. And even then, like, Autumn had seen it before. So.
Yeah. So this will be a first for the Final Girl Files.
We'll be on a little bit of a giallo kick for the next couple of episodes.
Yes.
I'll let our listeners guess which modern giallo we'll be watching. All right. And we will see you next time for The Red Queen Kills 7 Times. Bye, guys.
Bye.